like to take two or three, but I think I'm going to go more rapidly, then we'll go to some of the more complicated ones. Let's take 24, let's take Senate Bill 457 first.
Okay, that really should be taken simultaneously with 2445. What
right.
happened here was the full committee voted out Senate Bill 457 a few days ago with some amendments. The bill changes the time period when you, for certain consumer installment contracts, the time period for commencing an action for a deficiency, change the two dates and shorten one and lengthen another, which apparently was a compromise between the credit people and legal aid. After it went out of the Senate, they noticed that there's an absolutely parallel provision in the next statute, and they wanted to make the identical change there, which was also okay with legal aid. The full committee voted on that, and then legislative counsel phoned up and said you can't do it because of the relating clause. But I asked, and legislative counsel felt that you could put both amendments, both the original printed Senate Bill 457 and the amendments that this committee adopted last time, you could put both of those in House Bill 2445 because the relating clause there is civil actions, and the amendments have to do with time for filing that civil action in those particular kinds of cases. So if the committee wants once it's passed action to actually leave the committee, you could table Senate Bill 457 and put what you adopted for 457 into 2445 instead. 2445 is an empty shell right now because the provisions of that bill were all put into House Bill 2632, which is already passed out of our committee.
Okay, where is the, I misunderstood. Where is the amendment that won't go under the relating clause?
Should be in the file for Senate Bill 457. Maybe, I don't remember if I passed it out then or not. It should say amendments to Senate Bill 457 dated June 9th.
I have.
Okay. I've got a copy.
I'm sorry, I don't have it in my.
It makes a change to ORS 83840, the same change that is made in the printed bill, Senate Bill 457, namely it says that the person who's extended credit has to start a action to recover a deficiency no later than, it would change it to 120 days after which the lender repossessed the goods, or not later than 75 days after the date the lender disposes of the repossessed goods, whichever date is earlier. The creditors wanted to extend the one date because they said they don't have 30 days is not enough time in the present law, so they wanted 75 days, and legal aid said fine if you change this other date from 180 to 120 days. And that was done in the printed bill for installment contracts. This other section, 83840, has to do with not installment contracts but loans that are made on the security of certain kinds of consumer goods.
Were these amendments were considered in subcommittee?
Not in subcommittee. It only came to the attention of, but they were considered and adopted by the full committee a couple days ago.
Oh, I see. All right. That's when you found out about the relating clause.
Right. After it passed out of the full committee.
Yeah, that's one of the days, I guess.
You were in your other
committee. Yeah. 457 is technically out of the committee at this point.
Right, although it hasn't been reported out. We didn't send the measure out.
Chair would, let's see, I wasn't here to vote, so we'll need someone on the prevailing side. Right. Representative Lombard moves the House, the committee reconsider the vote by which it reported Senate Bill 457. Is there any objection? Chair would move that the provisions of Senate Bill 457 be substituted for the provisions of House Bill 20. Well, wait, first of all, is 2445 on the table?
Yes.
Chair moves that House Bill 2445 be untabled. Is there any objection? Chair moves that the provisions of printed bill Senate Bill 457 be substituted for the provisions of House Bill 2445, and that the bill be further amended by adding the amendments which have been distributed to the committee, and which were just reviewed a moment ago by Mr. Clark.
And I might point out those amendments were further amended on page 2. There was some deleted language about a third of the way down. That language is not to be deleted. That language is to be left as it is, where it says if the summons is served on the borrower and so forth. Those, those deletions should be eliminated and the existing language restored. The only change is in the two dates.
Let's take it in steps. Is there any objection to substituting the provisions of the print Senate bill for House Bill 2445 and striking the contents of the House bill? The chair would move the amendment to the addition, to the typed amendments by restoring the deleted punctuation and language on the second page, lines 6 and 7. Is there any objection? The chair moves that those amendments as amended be added to House Bill 2445 as amended. Is there any objection? The chair moves that House Bill 2445 as amended be reported with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Call the roll.
Bill?
Aye.
Lombard?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Rivera?
Aye.
Rayner?
Aye.
Rutherford?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
Okay, we adopt, we move 457 into 2445, Norm, because, and then we added those additional amendments because of the relating clause problem in 457. The chair would move to table Senate Bill 457. Call the roll, please.
Hill?
Aye.
Lombard?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Rivera?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
Rayner?
Aye.
Rutherford?
Aye.
Myers?
Aye. Table. House Joint Resolution 25.
Okay, Mr. Chair and committee members, HJR 25 actually was transferred from Subcommittee 1 to the full committee. It is an amendment to the Constitution that would be put to a vote of the people that would remove the legislators' immunity from arrest during and immediately surrounding legislative sessions.
Representative Hill or Nord, do you wish to comment on your proposal?
Mr. Chairman.
President Lombard.
This was the bill that I was going to refer to my 11-year-old grammarian, but
yes,
he left for horse camp Monday afternoon, and I didn't get a chance to pass it by him and get him to rewrite it. So I guess that leaves it in my lap if I want to make any suggestive changes. I don't know. I was going to ask staff if it just might not make a little more sense to take that phrase, be questioned in any other place, and insert it after the words not in line 7. And you wouldn't be splitting your infinitive there. Verb.
Would you read it as it's amended?
Or you can, shall not be questioned in any other place for words uttered in debate in either house.
Is there any objection to the amendment?
I should ask Representatives Hill and Miller, you know, since they are the chief architects of this bad language.
Well, that's, well, you're unprovoked attacks on legislative council. I'm sure that they won't take that too hard, Senator Lombard. But if you feel better with the language, I think they probably tried to write it in the archaic language that the Constitution was written in, but if you want to depart from that, that's fine.
Objection to the amendment?
What was the reason that, who's one of the main sponsors here?
Jim Hill. What's the reason for this?
The reason?
For this bill.
That we should be treated like everybody else.
Well, I was thinking of situations where people are suing, people would sue you in Gilliam County, wherever that is, or something. You'd have to go over there to answer or something, or subpoena you or something.
Subpoenaed? I think it's as immunity from arrest.
No, there's also an immunity from civil process.
Civil process, too.
Well, I think, as we all know, if you wanted to, I think maybe a judge would be amenable. We have things set over for many, many reasons. But the idea is to have us to be treated like everyone else.
Someone in the legislature sent a letter out throughout the state saying that you were in favor of a certain bill, and they perhaps didn't want you to vote on that bill, and they heard about it over there in Gilliam or Coos County or one of those outreaching places, and filed a lawsuit against you or some of you, or filed.
Well, if you're talking about suits in our official capacity as legislators, if we have a frivolous lawsuit bill that really has addressed that issue. I mean, we're sued many times, and we frankly never hear about those things. I think that as far as our official capacity, I don't see that as being the problem.
Well, I was thinking like a subpoena as a witness or something. They subpoenaed about 10 people out of this place, and it might grind to a halt.
Or it might speed things up.
Yeah.
Well, somebody might do it for that reason, too.
We moved in here when they formed that select committee.
Just get a select committee. Yep.
That's it.
Well, since the committee may well be about to report this out, and I'm not going to detain us too long, I do think that some of the comments are over-personalizing the situation here and losing sight of the institutional values that are reflected in this provision, which I think probably have antecedents that go back to early English history in terms of Parliament. And I think there are some very serious public reasons for the kind of protections that are reflected here. It's not a matter of special privilege for individuals in the sense of truly individuals. This happens to relate to the assembly as an institution. That's my humble opinion, and that's why I, for one, would oppose the joint resolution. It's a very fundamental change.
All right, Chairman, we can vote it up or down.
Let's do that. Is there a motion?
Yeah, so moved. Bill.
President Miller moves that House Joint Resolution 25 be reported with a due pass recommendation. Move the discussion. Call the roll, please.
Hill?
Aye.
Mombard?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Rivera?
No.
Smith?
No.
Springer?
No.
Rutherford?
Aye.
Myers?
No.
Or four fails. Courtney, where are you? Love that kind of pressure.
You're diabolic. It's like a minute.
2574.
It melts the pressure. All the cards just does break that deadline.
Hey, Mr. Chair and committee members, House Bill 2574 was sent due pass from Subcommittee 1 to the full committee. The main purpose, the purpose behind this bill is that it allows the Corrections Division to enter into leases or lease purchase agreements or installment purchase agreements for institutional facilities. It refers to that the cost could be paid out of a special account to be established in the State Building Fund, to which monies could be appropriated, and there could be limitations on the authorizations for the division in, for those monies, and it provides for the payment of rent by the Corrections Division for any such facilities. It provides that before entering into any such agreements, that the Corrections Division would first obtain the approval of the Legislative Review Agency as provided in the existing statutes, and for acquisition of office quarters, that they would get approval from General Services as provided in the statutes. Title to the properties that were acquired through these lease arrangements would vest in the Corrections Division in the name of the state.
General's House Bill 2574 be reported with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Representative Springer.
Linda, I recall in our discussion there was a question about whether or not we needed an amendment for a walk-away provision. Is there any actual language submitted, or was that concern addressed or resolved? It seems to me there was also talk about if it was state-owned land or private land for this facility. Were there any amendments submitted to deal with either of those two issues?
I haven't had any amendments submitted to me for it. It was recommended due pass, and I don't even really recall those comments. I don't know if I was not here or just don't recall.
Was this in sub-1?
I thought the walkaway provision was one that related to the terms of the arrangement itself, rather than the statute, which is fair.
Okay. I gathered also with the lease terms, I made the same notes Representative Springer did, but I think that my recollection was that these were simply probably terms to be left up to the particular lease arrangement. Is that, you know, Mr. Watson, Mr. Toombs are nodding their heads yes, so I think that that is the way it would be covered. It's a matter of the private contract.
Further discussion? Call the roll, please.
Hill.
Aye.
Lombard.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Scavero.
Aye.
Smith.
Aye.
Springer.
No.
Rutherford.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye. Room 2589.
Bill was passed with amendments, some of which were adopted conceptually by Subcommittee 1. It changes, it makes modifications in the provisions that have to do with executive clemency. I'll note in Section 1, it was amended substantially in the technical aspects of how the clemency procedure would work. The lines 8 and 9 are deleted, and I would just note that it does make it unnecessary to have Section 1 at all in the bill, except it makes a gender change. Usually they don't put a section into the bill merely for that purpose, but just make the gender change. There's other changes in the section, but at least it's there before you, but could be deleted. That section just basically provides that the governor can grant reprieves, commutations, and pardons. The Section 2 of the bill was amended to provide that the rather than send to all the required persons a copy of a notice of intention to apply for a pardon, that the actual application would be sent to the governor with a proof of affidavit by service that it had been sent to all these other people, and that all the other, well, the other people listed, the DA of the county where the conviction was made, the addition in subsection B in lines 15 and 16 of the district attorney in the county where the correctional facility is located, if the person is in a correctional facility, and under existing law, still the board of parole and the assistant director for corrections. So now, instead of sending a written notice of the intention to apply, an actual copy of the application signed by the person and stating the grounds of the application would be sent, the change in the application on line 13 is that instead of stating briefly the grounds of the application, it would be stating fully the grounds of the application. In subsection 3, provides that upon receiving a copy of the application, that these agencies would respond upon request from the governor for information relating to the case, or that they could generate such information themselves. They filled in the blank on line 28, saying that following receipt of the application, the governor could keep that application under advisement for a period not to exceed 180 days. And if that period lapsed, then the application would be deemed to have lapsed and there would have to be a whole new application process and notice sent out to all the parties. There were a few check with Bob Oliver, who said he hasn't dealt with these parts for some time, but I just wanted to get a notion of how many, and he thought they might get like 50 applications a year maybe, and he did provide a couple forms here. One of the questions that I'd had was when we say that they're to get a copy of the application, whether it's supposed to be just a sort of one-page thing or whether they were very long documents and all sorts of supporting materials. And from the information that Mr. Oliver provided, they are fairly short forms. There's an information on the application letter that's sent that says what the person has to do to apply and little forms to fill in what their reasons stated briefly as grounds for the application. The only other point that had come up about it was the fact that rather than as had been provided in the bill and as is provided under existing law, there's a lapse time between the person getting the notice and the time the governor would really get the application, so that if people were to object, there was necessarily a time frame built into it for persons that wanted to respond to jump on the gun and get information to the governor or do whatever they felt they could do. And now, while there's a 180-day period for the governor to respond, there isn't necessarily any lag time.
Which raises, I suppose, the issue of whether the committee wants to consider purporting to put in a minimum period during which the governor must hold the application before he or she can act on it. 30 days, for example.
I would agree that reasonable period of time, 30 days would be reasonable, I think, for the receipt of comments would be a good approach.
In line 28, the chair would move to amend the bill by move this subject to final legislative council refinement, but after the word period, to insert for a period of not less than 30 days nor more than 180 days. And then line 29, afterwards such, insert, I was going to say insert maximum, so it's clear you're using two period references in the previous sentence.
Or it could say 180 days.
Okay. So is there any objection to the amendments? Is there further discussion of the bill as amended?
Mr. Chair, I was puzzled about the requirement for someone who had been convicted out of Marion County and who was also housed in Marion County. Apparently, the Marion County District Attorney would receive two notices. Is that correct?
Same envelope.
Says the District Attorney shall be served upon A, the District Attorney of the county where the conviction was had, B, if the person making the application is housed in a correctional facility within the state of Oregon, the District Attorney of the county in which the correctional facility is located.
Well, those could be the same, A and B, and I think our intention was simply that there would be one, if they happen to be the same, one application would suffice for both. We don't intend that this.
Well, I looked at it, it doesn't say or, and it, of course, now it doesn't say and, but they are listed in series. And if we don't intend that, perhaps we should say something else.
We do intend if the conviction is, of course, in a county other than
right.
The correctional facilities located for both to get them.
Yes.
That's clear, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Linda?
I would think if it says, you know, if it was a Marion County person, that if the person sent, if they were convicted here and housed here, if they sent one to the Marion County District Attorney's office, they would have fulfilled both subsections A and B, wouldn't they?
Okay, if we're satisfied.
Further discussion of the bill's amendment? Chair would move House Bill 2589 as amended be reported with a due pass recommendation. Call the roll.
Hill.
Aye.
Lombard. Miller.
Aye.
Rivera.
Aye.
Smith.
Aye.
Springer.
Aye.
Rutherford.
Aye.
Myers.
Aye. Approved. Okay, House Bill 3001.
Okay, Mr. Chair and committee members, this was heard before in full committee, and this is a work session on it. I don't have an indication of any action being taken on the bill. Bill that has to do with creating the crime of unlawful paramilitary activity. There is a blank left in as far as what category of felony the unlawful paramilitary activity would be. And basically, the kinds of behaviors that are outlawed by the bill are teaching and demonstrating the use and application of firearms and explosives and such that are capable of causing injury and death when the person intends, knows, or has reasons to know that the devices or techniques would be used unlawfully or in furtherance of civil disorder. It also applies to persons who assemble for the purposes of training or practicing or being instructed along these lines. And then the terms are defined in subsection 3 that are used in the bill. There is a definition in subsection D, which at least after reading through it a couple times, it defines law enforcement officer. I don't see law enforcement officer used anywhere in the text of the bill, so it's a definition without a use as far as the printed bill goes. However, there are amendments that are entitled processed by but not drafted by legislative council, House Bill 3001-3 dated June 13th, where they do use the term law enforcement officer. The purposes of those amendments, which add new subsections, provide that nothing in the section makes otherwise lawful activities of a law enforcement officer unlawful, and it also describes other activities that are not made unlawful, such as classes in defense and self-defense and karate and so forth, also target shooting, and just enumerates a number of those type of activities.
I've reviewed the ACLU testimony. I was not at the hearing with Representative Lombard and looking in. All three were gone. Brownstein, would you like to comment on the ACLU testimony for those of us who were not here in terms of the Robertson issue?
Briefly,
could you identify yourself?
My name is Richard Brownstein. I'm the chairman of the Oregon Regional Advisory Board of the Anti-Defamation League with Abe Rith. Robertson is a case that, for the benefit of the committee members, deals essentially with a statute which expanded, I suppose, the basic law of extortion and blackmail into threats generally, and the Supreme Court struck it down because as I read Robertson, there is a requirement of speech virtually implicit in any action that would be criminal under the subject statute.